Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Daniels, and you're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels. I'm going to continue, but if anyone notices any reception problems, please raise your hand, and I'll call it on a different line. I'm not really sure how good my reception is this evening. Let me turn my volume up so everybody can hear. Okay. All right, great. So you're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit Amazon.com. Murder by Medicine is No Accident. That's the title. Be the first in your circle to get Dr. Daniel's new Kindle book, Murder by Medicine is No Accident. Get your personal Kindle edition. You no longer have to fumble and stutter as you try to tell your loved ones of the medical dangers. It even gave my editor goosebumps. A great read. Amazon.com, Murder by Medicine is No Accident. As always, I welcome your calls and questions. Please call in at 914-338-0695. Well, today's title is Perspicacity, How to Tell If You Have It. I'm going to examine perspicacity, and I even have a quiz so you can tell if you have it. I'm going to talk about the dangers associated with this condition and how to turn it to your advantage. Another eye-opener that can help you save your life and your limb. So first of all, I have to tell you my experience with perspicacity and my basic background. I grew up in the pre-civil rights era. This meant that the first attempt on my life, I mean someone tried to actually murder me, happened when I was 3 years old. And the second attempt on my life happened when I was 5 years old. And the third attempt on my life when I was 7 years old. Each time, I required the assistance of some adult to save me, and I, of course, had to give them quite a bit of help as well. Now, at the age of 10, I lived in a ghetto with streetwalkers parading up and down the street, on the other side of the street, of course, from my house. And I walked to what was arguably the most dangerous public school in Buffalo, New York. The school was so bad, even blacks felt there was a stigma to attending the school. And there was danger at every turn, and if anything happened, that's it. You're on your own. No backup, no justice, no help, no one to call. So my strategy was to stay as physically close to the teacher as possible. So if someone hit me, they'd have to hit the teacher first. Well, one day, at the age of 10, an adult was visiting my parents. I don't know what I said, but the adult said, that's a lot of perspicacity for a 10-year-old. I realized by the tone that perspicacity was not altogether positive, like someone telling you your slip was showing. My parents sadly nodded their head and said, yes, we noticed. I thought about that a few weeks later. A few weeks later, a teacher at the school made a similar remark. Then I knew I had a problem. The adults that I depended on for my security had detected a serious deficiency that I needed to correct. So I went to the dictionary. This is what I found. Yep, at the age of 10, I had to look up this word perspicacity because it was interfering with people's positive perception of me. So first, before I tell you what the definition I found, I have to say there's evidence that perspicacity is the next great affliction to hit the healthcare industry, and it's going to hit hard. And I want to say that just as a child with perspicacity is a threat to adults, a patient filled with perspicacity is the only thing that can halt the unrelenting rise in the annual number of people murdered at the hands of doctors each year. Perspicacity is stronger than any vaccine, more powerful than any government regulator, more vitriolic than a hanging judge, and the most formidable adversary for a murderous healthcare system. This is the power of perspicacity. It is my personal belief that perspicacity is highly contagious. This makes it all the more powerful. So what is it? Perspicacity is a noun. It means insight, discrimination, penetration, acumen, smarts, wit, sharpness, keenness, shrewdness, acuteness. And more precisely, it's intelligence manifested by being astute, as in perspicacity in business dealings. And intelligence, the ability to comprehend, to understand, and profit from experience. My mother would say, better the experience of others than yourself, but the ability to profit and comprehend experiences. And also, wiliness, shrewdness as demonstrated by being skilled, let's say, in deception. And shrewdness shown by keen insight, of knowingness. Shrewdness demonstrated by knowledge and street smarts, a shrewd ability to survive in a dangerous urban environment. Well, I certainly had perspicacity. But as a patient, you need street smarts, a shrewd ability to survive in a dangerous healthcare environment, because it's certainly dangerous. We're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit Amazon.com and look for Murder by Medicine is No Accident. Be the first in your circle to get Dr. Daniels' new Kindle book, Murder by Medicine is No Accident. You no longer have to fumble and stutter as you try to tell your loved ones of the medical dangers. This book is so exciting, it even gave my editor goosebumps. A great read. Amazon.com, Murder by Medicine is No Accident. As always, I welcome your calls and questions. Please call in at 914-338-0695. Now, I knew that a child of my age should not have perspicacity, but I needed perspicacity. Without perspicacity, I could not walk from my house to the most dangerous elementary school in Buffalo. Without perspicacity, I couldn't navigate my day in school without being raped or assaulted. Without perspicacity, I couldn't evade attempts on my life. I needed perspicacity, but I had to conceal it. Now, the role of patients in the healthcare system is that of a child. Just like a 10-year-old, patients are not permitted to have perspicacity. You see, perspicacity can not only save your life, safeguard you from financial ruin, prevent you from being maimed, it can deal a crippling blow to the system that conspires to rob you of your happiness, your health, and your wealth. Just one encounter with perspicacity can cause a healthcare worker to lay down his tools of torture. It can lead a hospital executive to seek honest work. So let's see if you have perspicacity. Don't worry. If you don't, I'll help you along. We'll talk about how to develop it. So I'm going to ask a question, review the choices, and you can score yourself right there at home. So get some pencil and paper, and at the end is a bonus question. If you get this one right, it's an automatic that you've got perspicacity. If you miss it, well, that's the way it is. So along the way, I'll share with you ways to build your perspicacity. These questions are hypothetical situations that happen every day in doctors' offices and in hospitals throughout America. So let's go. Our first question is, if your doctor tells you that emergency surgery is needed, would you? I'm going to give you the answers and the point value. Would you ask your doctor when? If so, that gives you 10 points. Would you get a second opinion? 10 points. Would you laugh? 0 points. Would you run? 0 points. Or would you tell the doctor you'd like to pray on it? Okay. Now, it turns out that the greatest perspicacity is to tell the doctor you'd like to pray on it. Why is this? Remember, as a patient, you are regarded as a 10-year-old child. The that you really don't have the legal standing or power to say no or up yours. So when you say to a doctor, you laugh at a doctor, or you say, man, I'm out of here, then that's a red flag to the doctor. So something's got to happen here. You have to be reported. You will be reported. The doctor will note in the chart that you are a non-compliant patient, that in your insurance, they may suspend your insurance and keep your premium money because you're non-compliant. All kinds of repercussions are there. But if you tell the doctor you'd like to pray on it, that changes it totally. It turns out that your doctor is not just a doctor. Because your doctor is licensed by the government, and because your insurance company operates under permit from the government, these are actually agents of the government. Because of the separation between church and state, in other words, it's still, at the moment, against the law or against the Constitution for the government to compel you to do anything against your religion or to interfere with your practice of your religion. So if you say to a doctor you would like to pray on it, use just those words. You don't want to pray about it. You want to pray on it. It's a nuance that's important. You want to pray on it. And the importance of this is once you use the word prayer, once you bring prayer into this, the doctor has got to back off. He's not allowed to report you. He's not allowed to accuse you of bad behavior. He's not allowed to declare you crazy and compel you to submit to therapy anyway. So when you say you'd like to pray on it, it's practicing perspicacity with not letting on that you caught on to the doctor's tricks. Now, if you ask your doctor when he should have emergency surgery, that's a very bad question, because when you ask the doctor when, that's an implied yes, and the doctor will take that ball and run with it. Then, when you try to exhibit concern or doubt or say no, then the doctor has his arsenal of tools. He can call in a psychiatrist to evaluate you to see if you're really okay, competent to refuse. Then he can maybe contact a close relative, maybe a spouse or a parent, see if he can get them to coerce you. He can report you as being a bad or non-compliant patient, endangering the profits of your insurance company, report you to the insurance company. In any case, all records are electronic and available to the government. So consider yourself reported should you decide you want to outright refuse. So while I did give a last run and tell a doctor you'd like to pray on it, all got to zero, best answer exhibiting the greatest perspicacity would be tell the doctor you'd like to pray on it. Okay, doctor asks if you would like a second opinion. What do you do? One, ask him which one of his golf buddies he would recommend. That gets 10 points. Ask your insurance company who they will pay for. That gets 10 points. Check the online directory of competent certified doctors in your area. Another 10 points. Last, that gives you 5 points. Or tell your doctor you'd like to pray on it. Next, look up Marie Laveau. So tell your doctor you'd like to pray on it gets 0 points. Again, because tell your doctor you'd like to pray on it, that means the doctor basically has just received an official cease and desist order. He does not have the right to go any further in compelling your compliance. And looking up Marie Laveau, this is very important. Marie Laveau is not a physician. Marie Laveau is a legendary high voodoo priestess. Now, some listeners have told me they don't want me to take the name of God in vain. But what I'm saying by check out Marie Laveau is check out anybody that's not certified in health. That would be the person to consult. So consult someone who might be a healer but is definitely unlicensed. Anyone who's licensed is an agent of the government because the government confers the license. So an unlicensed individual, that's what you want to do. And Marie Laveau is a legendary individual, subject of a absolutely famous country song. All right, next. You've been informed that your child has an ear infection. The doctor recommends an antibiotic. What do you do? One, go to the pharmacy, get the prescription filled, and give it to your child. Two, that's worth 10 points, by the way. Tell the doctor that your child gets plenty of antibiotics in his milk and meat, and save the antibiotics for people who eat organic. They need it. Although it might be nice, that would definitely get you 5 points. Next, stifle a laugh so the doctor will not call Child Protective. That gives you a zero. And or go to the pharmacy, get the prescription filled, and do not give it to your child. That gives you a zero. Now, it turns out that whenever a prescription is filled, the fact that the prescription is or is not filled, or I should say the fact that it is filled, is recorded and put in a data bank, and that information is sold to your insurance company and to the drug companies and to various other marketing individuals, and I should say competitors of the drug company. So people who sell the antibiotics that your doctor did not prescribe will get a record showing that you did fill the prescription and which doctor prescribed it. Now, it's important to know this, because if the doctor writes a prescription and you don't get it filled, the drug companies know. Now, when I left practice many years ago, they would alert the pharmacy. The pharmacy got notice that you filled a prescription and how many refills were on it. And if you did not show up for your refill, the pharmacy actually got your personal information, phone number, and would call you to tell you, hey, you didn't show up for your refill. Go get your refill. And so once you go to a doctor, what happens at that office visit through various mechanisms becomes public knowledge. And so once you go to the doctor, you've kind of taken a committed step. In this particular case, it's a very sensitive issue because it involves a child. And a child, because of the way things have been set up, is not only the custody of the parent, but also the custody of the government. So if the government disagrees with any way that you are raising your child or caring for your child, then they have an agency called Child Protective, and Child Protective intervenes. And so if the doctor recommends an antibiotic for your child's ear infection, you pretty much either have to ask the doctor, does he have any other ideas about what could be done? Maybe he'll say, well, you know, it's kind of a borderline infection. Maybe you could just come back in 2 weeks and we'll check and see how it's doing. But if the doctor writes a prescription for a child, then there's an obligation to get that prescription filled. Now, surveillance has not yet progressed to the point where they can tell if you actually gave the antibiotic to the child. But presently, the technology is there, it is in place, it is being used to determine if that prescription was filled. And so a person with perspicacity would be aware of that mechanism, and having received a prescription from the doctor for that child, would at least get the prescription filled so as to escape suspicion, but not give the prescription to the child, because many antibiotics have devastating side effects, such as childhood leukemia. So your perspicacity rating, you get a zero. Zero, by the way, is the highest, the best score. If you go to the pharmacy, get it filled, and do not give it to your child. So what do you give your child? Poor kid's got an ear infection. That's why he went to the doctor in the first place. Well, you would give him garlic and mullein ear drops. These are between $12 and $15 available at your local health food store. And these and many other cures are available at my website, vitalitycapsules.com. You just sign up for my newsletter, and you get your free report, Remedies So Powerful It Could Make Antibiotics Obsolete. Okay, you are listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul Channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit Amazon.com. Murder by Medicine is no accident. Be the first in your circle to get Dr. Daniels' new Kindle book, Murder by Medicine is No Accident. A great read. It even gave my editor chills. So, of course, we welcome your calls. Please call in at 914-338-0695. All right, next one. The doctor tells you that research has shown that the therapy he's recommending may be helpful. You, A, accept his expert opinion. That's 10 points. B, ask if it's the standard of care. Another 10 points. Next, ask him if the study has been reproduced. Now, he'll know what this means. This means if somebody repeat the study and get the same results a second time. He'll probably say he doesn't know. We'll give that a zero. Ask him if he's recommending the 89%. He will probably say yes because he's recommending the standard of care. But the 89%, is what we mean by this is the 89% of therapy that's known to be ineffective. So 89% of everything doctors recommend is ineffective. And next, laugh and ask him to recommend something backed by his experience. So if he tells you the research has shown the therapy he's recommending may be helpful, the best option, maximum perspicacity, is to ask him to recommend something backed by his experience. This will shock him, but he will actually attempt to think of something that has worked in the past and recommend it. Because the doctor, again, he knows that what he's about to recommend has failed at least 89% in the past that he's recommended it. Okay, next. The 6 o'clock news announces a medical breakthrough. You check with your doctor to see if it will be when it will be available. That's a good 10 points. Now remember, you're in the privacy of your home this time. Laugh, zero. Turn the channel, zero. Turn off the television, zero. Check your BS meter. Now, your BS meter is that meter that measures that bull excrement. So it turns out that the medical breakthroughs announced on 6 o'clock news are actually paid product placements. In other words, the person reading the news is given this announcement to read about a medical breakthrough, but that medical breakthrough is actually a piece of information that's being paid what is known as propaganda. Down here in Panama, we don't use the word advertisement. We say propaganda. And so it's very interesting when I first got down here, and I didn't know the language as well as I do now, so I asked a Panamanian friend, well, what's this? What's this? Do I have to do this? No, that's just propaganda. I said, propaganda? I thought he was talking about government, but what he really was talking about was advertisement. So down here, advertisement is known to be false and untrue. It's just not even, it's just basically dismissed. So when 6 o'clock news announces medical breakthrough, it's information that they are paid to place there by the drug companies. Also, drug companies have been putting a lot of advertising on television, so it's a substantial portion of television revenue. This means that their products and their announcements get very good placement, number one. But number two, it means that the news is not going to run a story or reveal any information about a medicine that might be less than flattering. So when the 6 o'clock news announces a medical breakthrough, you should realize what you're really listening to is an infomercial. So to check with your doctor to see when it will be available is probably not a good idea. I mean, some sense of your health, not a good idea. So we give that a 10. Okay, next. You see a commercial for a new drug. It's called perspicacity. What do you do? Do you make an appointment with your doctor to see if the drug is for you? That's definitely 10 points. Do you invest in a drug company that's releasing a drug? That's 5 points. Do you realize the effects will be the opposite of what the name implies? That's a 0. Do you laugh so hard that you cry? That's a 0. Now, whenever you laugh, that's always, always going to heal you. So especially if you laugh, the harder you laugh, the better. So you got to laugh at this stuff. You just can't take it seriously. So if you see a commercial for a new drug, perspicacity, do not make an appointment with your doctor to see if the drug is for you. It doesn't even matter what the drug is. Just skip that one. Okay, next. You go to your doctor's office for a cold, and he tells you that you are overdue for your pelvic exam or for your rectal exam and should have it done today. What do you do? Do you drop your pants and have an exam that day? That's definitely a 10-pointer. Do you thank him for reminding you and tell him that you will schedule an appointment for that at another time? Another 10 points. Or do you tell him that you came for a sore throat, not a groping session, and refocus the conversation on your sore throat? Or do you realize that his mind is in the gutter and leave the office asking for a refund? This is an interesting thing. The greatest perception, wisdom, and understanding here is exhibited by the final choice, which is to realize this doctor has no interest in your health. And not only leave the office, but ask for a refund. Getting a refund for a doctor is more damaging to the doctor than if you won a malpractice suit. Why? Because when a doctor loses a malpractice suit, all the money is paid out by a third party, not by the doctor. It doesn't affect his income at all. It doesn't even raise his insurance, malpractice premiums, to tell you the truth. And if you ask for a refund, even if it's only $10, if it's only just your copay, or $20, that's still a bigger impact than a lawsuit. So this is a tremendous amount of understanding and perceptiveness that can have really a tremendous impact on the physician. And you need to understand that these screening exams, whether it's a pelvic exam or a rectal exam, tend to be a way of labeling healthy people as having a disease. And they generate revenue not only for doing the screening exam, but for treating the false positives that result. So if you have missed a screening exam and the doctor says, whoa, hold everything, let's have a screening exam right now, then you need to find some way to avoid that ordeal. Now, if you can agree to reschedule and then forget to reschedule, that's one way. But now doctors are so pressured to put every single patient through these screening things, and the charts are computerized and screened, that your trouble actually gets flagged. And if the doctor works, say, for a clinic, then they can say to the doctor, this person is not to receive any more services until they receive a pelvic or until they receive a rectal exam. And so it can get pretty dicey. But if you are up against that kind of situation where a doctor tells you that he wants to do this screening exam, whatever it is, or else you will receive no more therapy at his office, then the strategy would be to find another provider if seeing a physician is still what you want to do. And the next one is your doctor tells you that you have prostate cancer. What do you do? One, do you ask him what your treatment options are? That's 10 points. Or two, do you tell your wife no more sex? That's 10 points. Or three, throw a party to celebrate your 100% survival rate, which is guaranteed even if you refuse therapy. So three gets a zero. That's when it shows the greatest degree of perspicacity. The survival rates for prostate cancer right now are 100% disease-specific survival. What does that mean? That's an important nuance there. Disease-specific survival means people may have died in that five-year range. It's five-year survival is where they measure cancer survival. People may have died during that 5 years, but none of them died of the disease under discussion. Why would they want to measure that? Because as a human being, all you care about is your total survival. In other words, if at 5 years, people who refuse therapy, 93% are alive, but other ones who got therapy, 85% are alive, but nobody died of prostate cancer, then you'd want to know that, wouldn't you? Well, if someone was selling chemotherapy, they'd want to conceal that, wouldn't they? Yes, they would. So by only using disease-specific survival, it conceals any information about whether people are living longer with or without therapy. It also conceals any data that might show the therapy for the disease is deadly. So in prostate cancer, they only give you disease-specific survival. And so they only give you death rate due to prostate cancer, not death rate due to anything except prostate cancer. Now, you know, and I know, people die every day. So obviously after 5 years, you get two groups of 100 people. It's going to be, these are adults, it's going to be at least one death somewhere, somehow. And so one thing we do know is the death rate in the untreated group is not any higher than the death rate in the treated group. And so if prostate cancer is your diagnosis, the wise thing to do would be to throw a party for all your friends and celebrate your good health. Next, a movie star gets bilateral mastectomy to prevent breast cancer. What do you do? Well, you can make an appointment with your doctor to see if this is right for you. That's good for 10 points. You could get a screening mammogram. It's good for 10 points. You could check to see if your insurance covers this procedure. Big 10 points. Or last, you can enjoy the show and keep your boobs for breastfeeding and life's simple pleasures. Now, this is really important because the movie star, shall remain nameless, had a bilateral mastectomy to prevent breast cancer. What the public was not told, and what you can find if you dig on the internet, is this movie star did not sacrifice her nipples. She kept her nipples. What does that mean? Nipples are breast tissue, so she did not have a mastectomy. Instead, what she had was a very high-end boob job that was marketed as a mastectomy. So her chances of breast cancer, whatever they might be, are in no way diminished because this piece of breast tissue, her nipples, were left behind and were not removed. So this was billed or marketed to the public as a mastectomy, when actually it was just a very high-end breast enhancement procedure, because when you leave the person's breast tissue there, the final shape of the breast implant becomes unpredictable. But if you take the breast tissue out, then when you put the breast implant in, you get a much better profile and looks much more natural. So whenever you hear about movie stars endorsing things or movie stars doing something and you should do it too, again, the wise and perceptive thing to understand is this is an actress. These people are paid to do one thing and give the impression that they did another. They are paid to give the impression that what they did was real when really it's not. And so when you hear that a movie star gets a bilateral mastectomy or gets a foot or leg or hand amputated or whatever, then you should regard it for what it is. This is a movie star. We're talking about entertainment. Okay, so that is the decision, which is to keep your boobs and enjoy the show. You're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit Amazon.com and check out Murder by Medicine is No Accident. Be the first in your circle to get Dr. Daniels' new Kindle book, Murder by Medicine is No Accident. It even gave my editor goosebumps. A great read, and check it out for sure. This is the first in a series. The name of the series is Murder by Medicine is No Accident, and this first book is The Lethal Dose. But if you look under Amazon.com, under Murder by Medicine is No Accident, you'll find it. And of course, I welcome your calls and questions. Please call in at 914-338-0695. Okay. Now, your doctor tells you that you need to see a specialist. What do you do? First, ask them to recommend one. This is definitely 10 points. Next, ask him to take his best guess as to what he thinks it might be. Now, this is really perspicacity. This is showing extreme perceptiveness. Because your doctor is recommending you see a specialist, he's got some inkling as to what he thinks this might be. So ask him to take his best guess, which is going to spare you, potentially, torture and extreme expense. Now, why should you ask him to take his best guess? Because doctors, primary care doctors, refer patients to specialists really for two reasons. One, he feels the specialist is capable of doing something a doctor is not capable of doing. That's only one. But two, what the specialist is going to do is so dangerous and so harmful that it's something a doctor can't even bear to do himself or recommend. And when I was in medical practice, that was a really awful thing. In the standard of care, it's a step-by-step thing. You know, you do, first you do one, then you do two, then three, then four, then five, step six, whoop. Refer to a specialist. A specialist then does all kinds of painful, agonizing tests and charges the patient lots of money. At the end of the day, no one ever knows what's going on, or they find a disease that has no treatment. And so the doctor who's referring you has been down this road a few times. And so ask him, what's his best guess? What does he think this is? And he'll tell you. And then ask him, is there any treatment for that disease? And he'll tell you honestly. He'll say either A, there's no treatment, or B, to his knowledge, there's no treatment, but there might have been a breakthrough in the last 10 minutes, and go see the specialist. But you'll get a lot out of that question. The next thing, of course, next choice, tell the doctor. You'll have to pray on it. And go home and pray on it. Now, a specialist, like I said, is someone who recommends deadly therapies. And that's really the long and the short of it. The way medicine works is it's in hierarchy. The low man on the totem pole is a primary care doctor. He has the power to recommend the least deadly therapies. Not necessarily the least effective, the least deadly therapies are at the primary care level. Then you go up to the next level specialty. Usually it's your general surgeon, for example. He has the authority to do even more deadly therapies. Surgery itself is more deadly because of the chances of wound infections and the increased death rate just from that one complication alone. Then you have the specialty surgeon, another level of deadliness. So the more specialized the doctor is, the more deadly his intervention. My experience, a lot of times, are less effective. But if your doctor tells you need to see a specialist and you're able to actually get up and walk out of the office, that would probably be the most, that would exhibit the most perspicacity. Now, as you walk out the office, you definitely want to let him know that you're going to pray on this. Because, again, refusing therapy can have consequences. It causes the doctor to push the red button, so to speak. Next, your doctor tells you the benefits outweigh the risk. A, accept his recommendation, that's 10 points. B, ask him what the risks are, another 10 points. C, ask him what the benefits are, another 10 points. Or D, inform the doctor that you have a roast in the oven and have to leave suddenly. Or E, tell your doctor you have to pray on it. Again, you have to pray on it. You're taking advantage of the separation of the power of church and state. This means the doctor cannot compel you any further. It means he can't hound you or harass you with phone calls. He can't call in the psychiatrist and call you crazy. He does not have the authority to call your relatives to try and bully you into submitting. So once you invoke religion or God, then by law, because the doctor is representative of the state, because of the separation of church and state, you have the authority to demand that nothing further be done, that he leave you alone. Now, if you don't want to leave you alone, if you want to have, you know, chit-chat about it, then, you know, ask him what the risks are, ask him what the benefits are. He's going to give you some answers. He's going to tell you the risks as he was trained to tell you by the drug companies at the continuing medical education conferences. He's going to tell you the benefits the same way. But the true risk is that you could die, and the true benefit is he gets paid. So, that's pretty much the summation of it all. But that's not, as doctors, the risks and benefits that we are trained to share with patients. We are trained to tell them about the risk being things like nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, headache, the whole list of symptoms that just make your eyes glaze over. And then the benefits are, well, it could help. And so we know that these drugs are all based on 89% of false research, and that's reflected in the fact that 89% of all therapies doctors recommend are simply ineffective, if not harmful or even deadly. So definitely tell your doctor you have to pray on it. Your doctor tells you you need to take a drug the rest of your life. What do you do? A, you accept the medication and begin your first dose right there in the office. That's worth 10 points. Or you ask if there's anything else he would recommend. That's worth 10 points, too. Or you get the prescription filled, but do not take it. Now, this is the most wise and perceptive response to the situation. Or, of course, you could accuse your doctor of fraud. Because, obviously, if he's going to give you a drug, you need to take it the rest of your life, then the drug has got to be, well, ineffective, of course. And so, of course, to accuse him of fraud would be, strictly speaking, the accurate thing to do, but under the circumstances, given that the doctor is a representative of the state, imbued with certain police powers, is probably not a good idea. So I would say get the prescription filled, but do not take it. That would be your wisest way to go. And a lot of this is dependent on whether you have insurance or whether you don't have insurance. If you do not have insurance, you have a greater degree of freedom. So if you do not have insurance, then you have a lot more freedom in terms of refusing the prescription, accusing a doctor of fraud, a lot of other things. But if you have insurance, that raises you to a level of almost implied consent, implied participation in the game, so to speak. That means when you have insurance, you have, by implication, consented to submitting to the police powers imbued in your doctor and in your insurance company. If you do not have insurance, then pretty much really slows down, even stops the progress. No hospital will, a few hospitals will admit you for murderous therapy unless they can get insurance in place at the check-in point. The law is very clear that doctors and hospitals are not obligated to provide any care that is not paid for. And so by not having insurance, it gives you a lot more control. First of all, your doctor is not going to recommend deadly things, because if he does, he can't get paid. So that's going to let out a lot of stuff. So if your doctor tells you you need to take a drug the rest of your life, if you have insurance, get the prescription filled, but don't take it. If you don't have insurance, you can tell your doctor he's a fraud and a fake, and to get back to him, he's got something that works. That will actually shake him up, by the way. And that will get him to reflect and think, and you might actually get a convert to someone who agrees to stop murdering people. All right, you're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit Amazon.com and check out Murder by Medicine is No Accident. And be the first in your circle to get Dr. Daniels' new Kindle book, Murder by Medicine is No Accident. As always, I welcome your calls and questions. Please call in at 914-338-0695. Now we have our final question. This is a make-or-break one. You guys might have been tallying along, adding up your points, seeing how you go here. Here it is. This is the big one. If someone offered you free, all caps, free health insurance, would you accept it? Answer, of course, is yes, no, or maybe. If you answered yes, that's 10 points. If you answered no, that's 0 points. If you answered I don't know, that's 10 points. Now, why is this such an important thing? If you answered I don't know or yes, then your level of perspicacity is, well, lacking. The reason for this is that once you are labeled as having health insurance, you become a covered life. Look that up, covered life. It's an insurance term. You are the property and asset of the insurance company, and they have the legal authority to compel you to do whatever they want as a condition of coverage. Now, there are some limitations that can't require self-immolation, but they can put some pretty incredible restrictions on your behavior. Even if you accept this situation for free, you are still an asset that can be traded and controlled, used as collateral, and you have yielded power over your greatest asset, your person. In other words, if you, in your mind, have decided that you would accept insurance, free health insurance if offered, or that you're not really sure if you'd accept it or not, then sooner or later, some corporation is going to offer you free health insurance. Once you agree to it, you become their property. An example of this is Merck Medco. This was a health insurance company, so everyone thought. It was free to sign up. Can't beat that. You got your medications for 3 months at a time for a pittance. The catch? They preferentially shipped medications made by Merck. They sent your doctor a list of preferred medications, all Merck drugs, Merck's competitors got wind of this and put a stop to it using legal action. The patients, of course, were oblivious. The free insurance was just a control and exploitation move, ownership, and control of the patient to increase profits. So, add up your score. If you got more than 10 points, your life is in danger. You are at very high risk of being maimed, mutilated, or even burnt. Definitely go to Amazon.com and get Murder by Medicine is No Accident, a $3 investment that will surely raise your perspicacity. That's it for perspicacity. If anyone has any questions about perspicacity, please, you know, click the little button there and I'll answer them. Now, next week is really big, really, really big. Next week I'm talking about HIV/AIDS, a truth so huge it cannot be covered up. Their numbers, my logic, you decide. Is AIDS deadly? Is it harmless? Did some nefarious government invent it in a lab? How many Americans die in each year? Could universal condom use prevent its spread? Are HIV drugs effective? Should you get tested? Using only establishment statistics, I, Dr. Daniels, will come to a shocking conclusion about AIDS in America. I have to tell you, the conclusion was so shocking, it even shocked me. I was surprised. As I started crunching the numbers and working the numbers, I said, holy cow, unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable. So are there any questions? People can click the little button and ask a question. What else do I need to talk about to let you know about? There was a huge medical breakthrough. Oh, I know what it was. The death penalty. You probably wonder what the death penalty has got to do with medicine. Well, with 856,661 people being murdered every year by medicine, one has to ask, what is the source of this, all this murdering? Well, turns out the murdering is being carried out by government-licensed doctors and government-certified facilities and government-licensed, paid for through government-licensed insurance companies, or even worse, through government insurance such as Medicare and Medicaid. So what's the deal with this? If it can be established that the government does not have the right to murder its citizens, yes, there's 14,000 homicides every year. Yes, a certain number might qualify for the death penalty. But in exchange for letting a few of those off the hook or letting them serve life prison terms, what the rest of us would get back would be a premise for deciding that the government does not have constitutional or legal right to finance the murder of its citizens or to directly murder its citizens. Because right now, the government is standing by and paying for hospitalizations where the patient died and the death was caused by the hospital. And so outlawing the death penalty on the basis that the government simply does not have the right to take the life of its citizens, period, would open the door for the government, or to compel the government, to stop paying for medical care administered when the patient ends up dying, or not paying for medical care administered where the outcome is death and death can be attributed to the medical care itself. What this would cause is it would cause hospitals to observe what's called the 80-20 rule. Now, a lot of you probably know what the 80-20 rule is. The 80-20 rule says that 80% of any outcome is only caused by 20% of the action. In other words, 80% of the murders by medicine are caused by only 20% of the doctors. This is not to say that other doctors don't murder anyone, but it is to say that 80% of the murders are caused by 20% of the doctors. And any hospital can do a very simple and easy check and see which doctors have the highest number of patients that are discharged to the morgue and suspend the privileges of those hospital, of those doctors. Now, why would a hospital not do that? Well, because for many hospitals, that's the biggest profit center. That's where the profit lies. The profit lies in patients that are discharged to the funeral home. Now, this is a very unpleasant reality. But that is the truth, that for many hospitals, if they fired or in any way restricted the privileges of the doctors who are responsible for 851,661 murders every year, they would actually go out of business. If, on the other hand, the government took the position that it was not in the business of murdering its citizens and therefore would not pay for any hospital visit that resulted or ended in murder or homicide, then the hospitals would have no choice but to take a look at the data which they have, and use it and discharge these doctors, because their losses from not discharging them would be even higher than their loss from discharging them or letting them go. In other words, restricting their hospital privileges. So it's very important for people who are involved in such things as the death penalty, or should it be supported or not supported. The problem is that right now it is legal for our government to murder its own citizens. And that's exactly what's happening in a very fast clip. And when you add to that the fact that these drugs that are murdering people, when properly prescribed, are approved by a government agency, then you realize that the murder by medicine is not an accident, and that different branches of government have their hand on different levers that are necessary to create this lethal, deadly situation. And I think that a head-on approach to it, in terms of getting this agency to do this, that agency to do that, is probably not going to be effective. But if we simply establish a premise that the government does not have the right to murder its own citizens, then you can take the second corollary, which is the FDA does not have the right to approve a drug whose therapeutic dose is higher than the minimum lethal dose. And so when a drug's therapeutic dose is higher than the minimum lethal dose, then prescription of the drug reliably can be expected to result in murder. So establishing on some level that the government does not have the right to murder its citizens would very quickly and easily solve this very murderous situation that we have. Today's topic, which is perspicacity, would definitely solve it. For patients to have more perspicacity, to judiciously or even just wholesale refuse therapies recommended by a doctor would go a very long way. Now, I talk about the 851,661 people who die every year, but that's really the tip of the iceberg, because 73% of people who take medications experience side effects. It's called harm. That's harm. It's unwanted harm. So that's a lot of harm. And then you add to that 25% of people who go into a hospital experience serious harm as a result of their admission. I mean, they don't die. But they're seriously maimed or otherwise harmed as a result of their hospital admission. That's a lot of harm. And having perspicacity means that not only do you realize that harm exists, but you have the courage to say, I'm not going to participate in that. Remember, that's really your only relief, because there's no one else that has any interest in your health your well-being, or your very life itself. The government has been very clear that it does not have an interest in the health of its citizens. The behavior of the licensing boards, the behavior of the FDA, of the CDC, of the Department of Health and Human Services, all of these departments are very clear in their behavior, in their policies, that your health is not their primary concern. So you cannot expect the government to save you. Superman, Batman, or Spider-Man are not going to swoop down at just the right moment and rescue you. This is not in the cards. And your relatives, one, they might not be present, and two, they might not be able to. They might be risking being accused of elder abuse if they attempt to intervene on your behalf. So between the system's ability to accuse your caring relatives of elder abuse and the system's ability to declare you mentally insane and compel therapy, or not mentally insane, mentally incompetent that you can't decide for yourself, it makes a pretty dangerous self-serving situation. And unfortunately, the only right of refusal is, one, to not show up, two, invoke prayer, tell them that you're going to go home and pray on it, and you'll get back to them when you're through praying. And then you pray just as long as you want to. And the other option is there's something called elective surgery. So refusing elective surgery is an option. Elective surgery, as a rule, is less deadly than needed surgery or necessary surgery, but it's also very deadly as well. So the strategy is to just say no and to refuse therapy, become a refusenik. It's just like teenagers in the 60s would refuse to go to the draft. They just refused. Why did they go refuse the draft? Well, they only refused because they didn't want to go to Vietnam. They figured they'd get shot at and they might die. Well, that's what we need to do. We need to become refusing. We need to refuse to become victims, refuse to become the next murder by medicine statistic. I just want to say one more thing. If people tell me, Dr. Daniels, I don't want to have surgery unless it's absolutely necessary. I said, well, if that's what you're waiting for, you will have surgery. Because I used to have that view. And I can tell you, I've had 3 unnecessary emergency surgeries. Now, at the time, the doctor said, this is got to do this surgery. It's a life and death situation. It must be done. And I believed him. I had the surgery done. It wasn't until I decided, about at least 10 years ago, that I was not going to have surgery of any kind under any circumstances, even if it meant I was going to die. And I can tell you, a few times in those 10 years, I truly believed I was going to die. And I said, well, here it is. This is it. I'm going to have to wait and just drop dead. Well, you know how that turned out, because here I am. And so a lot of times what happens is people are in extreme distress. The situation is harmless. But doctors are trained to exploit that opportunity, declare an emergency, and foist onto patients an unnecessary procedure that has nothing to do whatever with their situation. And then, of course, the pain or crisis or difficult situation would probably have gone away, say, over a period of 3 to 10 hours. But how do you know? You had the surgery, and then you got all this pain medicine. Mm-hmm. And that is the danger. Well, we have 60 seconds left, so thank you very much for listening. And do stop by Amazon.com and check out Murder by Medicine is No Accident. Thank you so much. We'll see you next week. HIV/AIDS, the truth is too huge to cover up. We'll talk to you then.
make-believe.